Hey everybody, you're listening to F This Movie! My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight to discuss his 15 favorite movies by Mike Primero.
Hey everybody!
How are you, Mike?
I'm good, how are you?
You haven't been on the show in a while.
No.
And that's really because of the way that we've been structuring this whole thing, that everybody's had a turn now, so it's been a while since you've been on. Was it Halloween?
Yes.
Good Lord.
I thought you were phasing me out.
I'm thinking about it, but we're going to see how tonight goes. like I said, you're listening to F This Movie. You can find us online at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/fthismovie. Find us at dvdverdictpresents.com. Thank you to Michael Staley and everyone at DVD Verdict for hosting our silly little show. You can search us in the iTunes store. You can find us that way just by searching in the iTunes. I said that right. And as always, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You're definitely going to want to follow us on Twitter if you've been paying attention, because coming up February 4th is the first ever F This Movie Fest. 5 movies that we're going to watch and discuss over Twitter all together. So sign up for Twitter, follow us on Twitter. And for more information, go to fthismovie.blogspot.com. 5 movies, all from 1982. Do you remember the movies, Mike?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Nice.
Blade Runner.
Yes.
Dark Crystal.
Yes.
I remember the fifth one. The fourth one is Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
And Road Warrior.
Yes. Very good. So it's really just a parade of hot women, because yeah. You got Phoebe Cates.
Sure.
Then you got Sean Young, mm-hmm. and Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
Then you got, the little Gelfling, Kara. Piece of ass.
Sure.
And then you've got, Kirstie Alley as, Mr. Savick. And, then you've got the Road Warrior. I don't know. Master Blaster. That's Beyond Thunderdome.
That is.
You got Vernon Wells with the mohawk.
Yeah, there you go, Vernon Wells.
And the chick who's like on the good side. Yeah. She doesn't fare very well. Spoilers for Road Warrior. If you're going to watch it with us, February 4th, F This Movie Fest. Do not miss it. And we're also still doing our Win Our Stuff contest. You've got a few more shows to enter. Email fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com and write in your favorite moment in our nearly 100 shows, and your name gets thrown into a hat and you have a chance to win some of our old DVDs. Mike, can you give us an example of, like, what's a movie that you're throwing in the pile?
I'm going to throw in my Discovery Channel Shark Week box set.
Look at that.
We'll be in there.
Every week could be Shark Week, courtesy of F This Movie.
Also, Brian De Palma's Blowout.
What?
Will be in there.
Oh, because...
The DVD.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's an awesome movie, everybody. You do not want to... You definitely want a chance to win Mike's used copy of Blowout.
There are other movies as well.
Yeah, right. But come on, Shark Week and Blowout. Right. See, that's the thing. I think people think, like, this is going to be garbage. Like, we're just going to put in our copies of Hocus Pocus or a Goofy movie. But we're not. We're hanging on to those.
We're not, because my wife would never let me...
Because they get watched in our houses still. So instead, Blowout and Shark Week. So that's awesome. But as long as we're talking about that, let me read a few more entries into the Win Our Stuff contest. These are people's favorite moments in show history, and two of these I actually saved for when you were going to be on the show.
Oh, wow.
So let me bust these out. Joseph Finn writes, easily for me, my favorite moment has to be the entire Sleepaway Camp podcast. And he's referring, of course, to the commentary track that we did for Sleepaway Camp, which, Mike, you were on. Now, it may be cheating that I had not actually seen the movie at the time, but I was laughing extremely hard to it for almost the entire thing, while also enjoying the more serious talking about some of the more oddball production notes. It was a great mix of high and low brow, and one of the better distillations of Pauline Kael's fabulous line about being able to appreciate high art only after you've seen great trash. The first time, I think, that anything related to F This Movie has been compared to something that Pauline Kael said. But high and...
Last.
Yeah, right. Thank you. High and lowbrow, that's our specialty. That's our bread and butter at F This Movie. Here's one that I saved for when you were going to be on. Because, listen, sometimes I can be an asshole, and I don't realize it. And then when somebody else points it out, I'm like, oh, why am I an asshole? Matt L. says, my favorite moment, easy, on the Green Lantern show, when Adam says Carol Ferris is one of the things the film got right from the original material, and Patrick immediately says, oh, so she's boring and horrible in the comics too? That alone helped me decide I would basically never see this film. And you're absolutely right to do that, Matt L. Never see Green Lantern. But of course, I realized, like, oh, what a dick thing to say.
Well, Adam started out liking that movie, really, at the beginning of that podcast. Yeah. He was ready to defend it. And by the end, he had turned.
Right. But I think that's just because we made cogent points about how bad that movie was. But we didn't bully him into disliking it.
Some of us
were
an asshole about it.
Are you sure? Because I feel like I kept saying, like, no, it's fine that you like it. I know that you like Green Lantern. But you're wrong. Here's one I definitely saved for when you were going to be on the podcast also. This came in actually a couple of weeks ago from JM, who has entered a bunch of times in the hopes of winning multiple Shark Week box sets.
I'm pulling for you, JM.
Hello, Patrick and the F This Movie gang. I've been a lifetime Star Wars hater. This is the real reason I saved it, because Mike, of course, is the biggest Star Wars fan on the podcast. I've been a lifetime Star Wars hater since at the age of 5 back in 78. I refused my parents' invitation to take me to see the then-new Star Wars movie. I distinctly remember pointing to a picture of Chewbacca on the TV screen during a commercial for the movie down in my homeland of El Salvador, where Star Wars premiered a year after its first U.S. theatrical run, and saying to my folks, "That looks dumb." Never saw the original trilogy until the theatrical re-release of the special editions in the late 90s. Wow. They were worse than I even imagined as a child. And I've only seen all 6 Star Wars movies 2 or 3 times each in theaters and on cable. So I'm not alone?
No, not alone. Okay.
Pound for pound, all 6 movies, the newest trilogy, more than the classic trilogy, but all 6 as a whole, pack the most shallow, idiotic, barely coherent, rancid, juvenile, asinine, ridiculous storytelling and characters ever committed to both 35mm and digital film, in my humble opinion, of course. And now JM also said this, almost this same rant about Sucker Punch, so you're not allowed to keep using this about different movies. Only one movie can be the worst. Anytime someone bashes or points out how bad a Star Wars movie is, a little angel somewhere in heaven, if there is a heaven for non-believing Gentiles, gets its wings. So naturally, one of my favorite moments in F This Movie podcast history was on the Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace podcast, when you, Patrick, make fun of Jake Lloyd. your old reliable chestnut, and here it is, written in print. I'm not just busting this out. He wrote it out. "Are you an angel?" Jake Lloyd impression followed promptly by your Hayden Christensen impression. Not as good as Jake Lloyd's, but the two of them kind of come together as a package now. I take offense. My Hayden Christensen is every bit as good as my Jake Lloyd. Thanks for all the fun, intelligent, and profanity-laced movie discussions you and your friends have engaged in over the past 20 months.
JM, at the beginning of this, you lost me, but you won me back with your love of his impression, because I'm with you. I want Patrick to do that impression on every podcast. You got to work it in.
I can try and make it happen.
It's like seeing, you know, Tom Petty live. Sure, if you want to play Last Chance, Dance with Mary Jane, go ahead. But I want to hear American Girl. And that's your American Girl.
You should attend the F This Movie Fest on February 4th when we watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High. That movie opens with American Girl.
There you go.
And ends with an abortion. Yikes! Spoilers for Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That's life, guys.
By the way, that's the theme of the festival. Every movie has an abortion. The one in the Dark Crystal. Tasteful, but weird, because they're puppets.
It is.
Finally, Mike Young wrote via Facebook, I want to cast my vote for Haverick as best podcast moment. It made me laugh and gave a name to the weird noises that can occasionally be heard on our baby monitor. That thrilled me to know
it. That is amazing.
That, like, somewhere people are, you know, the baby monitor is making noise. What is that? Oh, it's just the Haverick. Like, we've caught on. In someone's life in such a way.
Do you have a favorite moment if you were entering this contest?
I don't think I do, no, but how could I? Well, I've been on all 100 shows, and that would just be, I mean, honestly, the Haverick is up there because it made me laugh really, really hard.
Haverick is my, if I had to pick one, it's mine.
Yeah.
I mean, Marcon, what aggravates me about Marcon, and Patrick knows this about me, I was kidnapped as a baby from my room, and I was saving that for our Raising Arizona podcast. And then Marcon
stole your
in.
Thunder.
He did.
Your thunder.
You wait for my story about my uncle who owns an island of dinosaurs. I'm saving for our Always podcast.
That joke right there, my favorite moment on the podcast. Look at you. You
and
did it.
Here's my Shark Week DVDs.
So we're more than halfway. We're almost finishing our favorite movies series on our run up to 100 episodes. So obviously tonight we're going to talk about Mike's favorite movies.
Yes.
But before we do, Mike, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a lot.
Thank you very much. Let's talk about your five favorite movies.
Okay, my fifth is Avatar.
Yay! Let's talk about Avatar! OMG!
That's the other thing I want to work into every podcast. The Jake Lloyd impression and Avatar.
And an Avatar reference? Well, listen, we're only 10 minutes in, and we're good. So we can kind of wrap it up.
Yeah, yeah. Good night, everybody.
Okay, what have you seen?
I've seen a number of things.
Obviously, like you saw the year-end stuff.
I did. One
a
of them
lot
being
of it to make your list.
Tree of Life. You were kind enough to let me borrow it.
Yeah, I was kind enough. Is that what we're going with?
I didn't dislike Tree of Life.
I didn't really either.
Let's say middle portion, if you will, the Brad Pitt stuff.
Yeah,
I really, really, really liked.
Okay. That's the stuff in the movie that works.
No,
right?
I mean, it's just, it's filmed memories, and I thought, well, that sounds douchey,
but it actually feels that way almost the first time in a movie.
Right.
Like,
it absolutely does.
Yeah, he gets a lot of that right.
I really, really love that stuff. But there were many moments where I just felt like, and again, I don't know if I'm stealing this from you, this thought from you, but I felt like it was a parody of art films.
Do you think that, like, and again, a lot of people loved it, a lot of people named it as their favorite movie of the year, or definitely in the top 10 of the year, and that's fine, but do you think that for those people, because I feel like almost anybody who wrote about it, it was always like this weird qualified, like,
hey, absolutely,
like, that doesn't always work, but when it does, it's great, or boy, right, Terrence Malick really goes for it, and I agree with all that, like,
absolutely,
it's super ambitious and all that, but do you think that the people that genuinely reacted to it and loved it, do you think it's that middle section that they're responding to? Like, do you think that there's anybody who loves the opening and the end?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
So it's just that middle.
Especially the end. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely what I reacted to, and that's what I assume most do. But, I mean, overall, no, I liked it.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I'm qualifying. You know, he went for it.
It
I mean, it's
problems,
true, and I,
you know?
It does.
The dinosaurs should have been in the whole movie.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And they should have called it Jurassic Park. Like, basically, if Terrence Malick had made Jurassic Park, I'd be like, this is a great movie. I like Jurassic Park.
Exactly. I like the masturbating dinosaurs.
What else besides Tree of Life?
I saw...
Which is obviously your new favorite movie
of the year. It is. I saw Nice Guy Johnny.
The Ed Burns movie.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
You know.
All right. Yeah. Enough said. I don't even necessarily want to talk about.
How did you come to
Nice
see that
Guy
movie?
Johnny? It's on Netflix instant.
And you picked that. I'm just fascinated.
Here's what I really want to talk about. Okay. I want to like his movies.
Yeah.
So bad because
I'm pulling for Ed Burns.
Yeah, I'm absolutely pulling for him, and he's the movies he makes now, he makes. Yeah, on such small budgets, and it's guerrilla filmmaking, and it's super inspiring, and it makes, you know, it should make people want to go out, you know, grab a camera, make these personal movies, and he likes making these, you know, talky New York movies, as he puts it. So I really want to...
Because he doesn't have to make movies at all, really.
Right.
Like, he kind of has an acting career where he's in some higher profile stuff.
Right.
You know, that those first movies kind of launched him to a point where he kind of has a career. He doesn't have to make movies, especially these really super small movies. So it's like,
and especially because Christy Turlington's at home.
Right. So it's like, so this guy's making movies because he so badly wants to make these movies. And so then it's frustrating that, like, why? So this is the movie that you have to make that, like, you feel this burning desire to commit to, like, Nice Guy Johnny, really?
Right.
Or the four movies you made before this, you know?
So, I mean, I'm pulling for him.
He just keeps making the same movie.
Yeah.
And it's not all that good. Like, I feel like he kind of peaked. Like, Brothers McMullen is fine for what it is, especially being of the time. And I actually like She's the One.
Mm-hmm.
Sidewalks of New York, for me, is sort of the best Ed Burns movie. It's like all the things that he wants to do working in one movie. And then after that, it's like, It doesn't. It's not good.
No,
but he's got a movie out right now.
Newlyweds.
Yes.
Which
is on demand. You can watch on demand. And then he was in town.
Yeah, just like last weekend.
At the Gene Siskel Center, yeah.
Right. Doing a Q&A.
I have not yet seen it.
And I may be wrong about this, but I think he said he made Newlyweds for $9,000. And that's...
Really?
I swear. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I love that there's, you know, Ed Burns and filmmakers like him in the world. And they're...
Right.
Doing what they do, and I just, again, I want to like his movie so bad because I'm rooting for him. But
yeah, and I continue to see them, and honestly, his not that you can appreciate this on Netflix Instant, but his commentary tracks are often worth listening to. They're repetitive the way that his movies are, but he really does just kind of talk about making low budget movies, and he always sort of pitches it at people who want to make low budget movies. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he talks a lot, which is great because I don't listen to a lot of commentary tracks anymore because. There's too many of them, and they're just always quiet, and nobody says anything worth anything. But his are interesting.
I've never heard one of his, but...
I'm pulling for him. And the girl in Nice Guy Johnny, Carrie Bechet, whatever, she's the best thing about the movie.
Easily the best thing
about the movie. And she's in Newlyweds also.
She is. And Scrubs.
Yes, but like...
Which I didn't...
Everyone left Scrubs.
Right. Yeah. But right, when I finished Nice Guy Johnny, I looked her up and saw
it. Yeah, she was on the season of Scrubs after everyone had jumped ship.
So was she the JD of that?
I don't know who exactly. There was like a few JDs. Okay. That was part of the problem with the Saved by the Bell new class season of Scrubs.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's definitely the best part.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing worth talking about. How about yourself?
I still have not been to a movie theater in 2012, which has been rough, but there hasn't been enough worth seeing, really. By the time this comes out, I will have gone to a theater to see Haywire, and while I haven't seen Haywire yet, I can say, during the What Have You Seen Lately section, I saw Haywire. It was fucking awesome. best movie of 2012. Yeah. Gina Carano is terrific. The reviews so far have been positive. Mm-hmm. No one yet has said it's the best movie of 2012. I think Doug is alone beating that drum, but I'm with him.
I'm with him, too.
It's number one of the year. In lieu of seeing anything new, I continue to go through my collection and watch old stuff that I should have seen. And again, it makes me seem like just this ignoramus who hasn't seen all these movies, because now I have to come on here and admit that, like, I haven't seen that before. But, like, listen, I have seen a lot of movies, everyone. Many of them in black and white, okay? Many of them. Just not these specific movies. So, I finally saw Rashomon,
and?
Which I had never seen. I was worried when I started it, because I wasn't crazy about it.
Okay.
And then as it went on, it got a lot better, and it was really good. You know, I've seen some Kurosawa. I think he's one of those guys that I'm sort of lacking.
Have you seen Seven Samurai?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen like the, you know, Yojimbo and Sanjuro and Seven Samurai. And the movie of his that I love that I don't think gets enough credit.
Can I guess?
What?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
High and Low?
No, I have not seen High and Low.
Okay.
I'm embarrassed. No, it's actually a more recent one. He made it in like 1980. Kagamusha?
Oh, yeah.
That Lucas and Coppola produced. Man, that movie is crazy good. You know, Rashomon is great, and it's one of those movies that obviously is like shorthand now.
Yeah, exactly.
You use that to anytime there's people telling different versions of a story.
Right.
I've seen it filtered down through pop culture so much that like an episode of Different Strokes stands out in my head that does Rashomon, where like there's a burglar played by Terry Kaiser of Weekend at Bernie's fame, and they all have different versions of like who caught the burglar. This sticks out in my head so much, and it's Rashomon. Like, oh, that Kurosawa inspired episode of Different Strokes. But it was very good. And you know, one of the things I like to do sometimes after I see a movie is I like to read about it afterwards. And I read, you know, Ebert did one of his great movies essays about Rashomon, and it helped me appreciate it more. Every once in a while, I'll see a movie, I'm like, that was really good, but I don't appreciate certain things. Like I saw
Dial M for Murder.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
I remember you saying that.
And there's a little documentary about it on the DVD after the fact, because I saw it. I'm like, that was fine, but it was just a movie. Like, I didn't see Hitchcock in that anywhere. And then I watched the little documentary afterwards. I was like, oh my gosh, he was doing a lot of stuff in that that was invisible to me, which I appreciate, you know, especially right. The more movies I see, the less attracted I am to that, like, super show-offy style, unless it's Drive, obviously. But, yeah. So I saw Rashomon. Very good.
Good. I'm glad you liked it.
I haven't yet hit a movie where I'm like, why is that a classic? I know it's going to happen, but saw that. I saw Ace in the Hole, Billy Wilder movie, that for a long time was, like, almost unavailable. You couldn't find it, and then Criterion put it out a couple years ago. Very good. I would say not Billy Wilder's best movie, because I think the longer it goes on, the more the impact sort of diminishes.
Okay.
But very dark, very cynical, which Billy Wilder was always great at. Kirk Douglas, great.
He is great.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, I grew up with, like, sort of later Kirk Douglas performances, and so he never meant anything to me. But in the same week, I saw Paths of Glory and Ace in the Hole, and he's just kick-ass in both of them. Man.
Not to play this game, have you ever seen the Detective?
I have not.
He's wonderful. That was a movie because, like you, I grew up with the older Kirk Douglas, and then I saw the Detective in school, and it blew me. He blew me away.
All right, I got to see the Detective. Yes. Apparently, because you know, basically, my knowledge of Kirk Douglas is Greedy with Michael J. Fox. Just kidding, but I have seen Greedy
and Drops on the Howard Stern Show.
What are you saying? Billy Wilder writes dialogue, like, man, it's so good, and it just feels completely contemporary. So the movie's good. If you haven't seen Ace in the Hole, you should definitely see Ace in the Hole. I forget what's next on my list, but I'm enjoying this process thus far.
Have you started any new science fiction shows that maybe you hadn't watched last time we talked on a podcast? That maybe
Farscape. Yeah, no, I had to watch Farscape for a review, and it was okay.
Okay, that's okay.
I'm pretty sure that was it.
All right.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Is there a specific thing that you're trying to talk about on the show tend to always talk about on the show?
Well, I thought maybe this would be the one time that you would actually talk about it.
I try to not talk about TV for the most part.
Right.
I did watch a few seasons of Doctor Who, and I thought it was okay.
Okay.
I thought it was okay.
Oh, I can't wait till JM writes an email about what an ass you are.
I'll read it on the show. No, I saw the Doctor Who seasons 5 and 6 are great.
Thank you.
I have not yet gone through the David Tennant show. I'm still working my way through Eccleston. Not great, everyone. Not great.
He's been working his way through Eccleston. It's like 13 episodes.
Oh my God.
It's taken him about 13 months.
Because it's like when you read, did I already make this comparison? Like when you read a biography of someone. And it's I don't want to read about when you were a kid. Get to the stuff that I care about. Like, tell me about when you actually became Rowdy Roddy Piper. I don't want to know about growing up in Glasgow. Like, that's what Eccleston feels like. I know this is going to get to a point where I care and I'm happy that I'm watching this. But right now it's like reading about the early days and I just don't give a shit. Like, I don't care about your childhood, Paul McCartney and John Lennon and George Harrison separately. Tell me about when you're the Beatles. Become the Beatles already. I don't care about when you're a kid. Anyway,
all right.
Let's talk about your fave movies. So once again, on our run up to our 100th show, we've all done, we've all taken turns talking about 5 of our favorite movies, not necessarily our 5 favorite movies ever. Although you can categorically say these are your 5 favorite movies.
These are
without a doubt.
These are my 5 favorite.
In fact, movies. You don't even like other movies. These are the exactly. 5 that you like.
Exactly.
Okay.
My top 4 are my 4 favorite movies easily.
Yes.
5
is on a constant rotation.
It's
literally whatever you're watching at the moment.
It is.
Okay.
So Nice Guy Johnny is number 5. Alex last week said he felt...
Alex said a lot of things last week.
He did, but he said he felt bad because he felt his movies were obvious, like everybody loves them, right?
Did he say that?
I swear. Like, you know, he almost apologized for his list because there's nothing, you know, out of left field. I could have sworn.
He might have, yeah. I have a confession to make. I was not paying attention.
We could tell.
The fact that I said anything that made sense was a miracle.
Well, Alex, you can rest easy tonight, because my list... I mean, I really honestly thought about giving you, like, a B list.
Okay.
Because I feel like my list is... I'm being completely genuine. These are truly my favorite movies, yeah. But it's the douchiest list. Like, it is...
I won't say that. Yeah,
it's
I mean,
the most obvious.
I guess, list, but at the same time, it's like, why? Then
it's genuine.
And why else are these movies considered classic? It goes back to what I was saying, where it's like, oh, right, this is a classic for a reason. Oh, because it's awesome. It's just right. Like if you picked five horrible movies, I guess I would say like, well, I didn't expect that, but at the same time, couldn't right. You be accused of just trying to be Armand White, you know, like
absolutely.
I see something in these movies that nobody else sees.
Well, I'm not saying I would have picked five horrible movies, but I mean, they're like,
if you picked, okay. Like if you picked The Sun, like I would know that you were just trying, I'm totally kidding, by the way, Mike likes this movie called The Sun. It's like Belgian. Everybody see it. It's on Netflix Instant. He wrote about it on the site.
Yeah. It's a great movie. No, I mean, like, I could have picked, like, I love Swingers. I love Breaking Away. I love,
I've never seen Breaking Away.
What?
Well, I'm sorry. I just got around to seeing Rashomon. You think I'm going to see the fucking Breaking Away? Is Judd Nelson in Breaking Away?
No.
What movie am I confusing that with? Breaking Away, is that the bike movie?
Yeah, with Dennis Quaid.
And, what's the Kevin Reynolds movie with Kevin Costner and Judd Nelson? Fandango. Those movies in my head are the same. I have no idea why. Maybe Dennis Quaid is in both?
I don't even know.
I don't know that he's in Fandango. I cannot distinguish those two movies in my head. I have no idea why. Fandango and Breaking In. My whole life.
Oh, that's funny.
My whole life.
Oh, you should really see Breaking Away.
Okay.
All right, but anyway.
I have a lot to get to before I get to fucking Breaking Away on your B list.
Like Christopher Eccleston, Doctor Who.
Exactly. I got to get through all those, man.
But I decided to stick with the A-list because I'm trying to be genuine.
Real quick, throw out some more movies that like could have maybe made the B-list.
Halloween.
Okay, yeah, sure. We did a whole podcast on that. Luckily, I cut out the section where we talk about Halloween on accident. Sorry, everyone.
The Empire Strikes Back, Rocky. Okay.
Now that's Star Wars Episode 5, are you talking about?
Yes.
Empire Strikes Back?
Right.
Indiana Jones and the Empire Strikes Back, is that what you're referring to? Rocky? Seriously, you put Rocky? Oh!
Raiders of the Lost Ark. I love Rocky.
I know you do. Okay. You love all the Rockies.
I do, but I mean, I think the first Rocky is a great
movie.
It's
good, right.
Yeah.
Well, one best picture, how could it not be good?
Well,
these are your five favorite movies.
Yeah, so these are
Citizen Kane,
five favorite movies, right. Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. Rules of the Game.
In Gone with the Wind.
Yep. Done. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Here are the five. Donnie Darko, 7.
This popped into my head today.
Boondock Saints.
This popped into my head today. Feel free to cut this out of the podcast, but it's movie related.
All right.
And I just, I feel like this deserves some type of mention. I may have mentioned this to you before. Have I talked to you about my weird thing with Nuns on the Run?
Definitely not.
Okay.
Everyone, there's still 2 weeks to get in your favorite podcast moments. You'll want to pay attention for the next 2 to 3 minutes.
No, I just, Nuns on the Run, I've never seen it.
Where is this going?
It came out.
I'm excited, but also scared.
It's very underwhelming story, but I feel like I need to talk about it.
I'm peeing in my pants.
The movie came out in, I think, 89 or 90.
Okay.
I've never seen it, but right. When I was younger, I'd see the trailer on TV, and it stars, you know, Eric Idle and Robbie Coltrane.
Yes.
And I believe they are criminals and they are on the run and they dress up like nuns. Right?
I got almost all that from the title.
Okay. So there's one point in the trailer where they're dressed as nuns, and Eric Idle turns to Robbie Coltrane and says, "You call this going straight?" I swear to God, I'm not exaggerating. So it's, 21, 22 years later?
Yeah.
There is not a month, I'll say, that goes by that I don't have, this is an inside joke with me or in someone else, this is all me in my head. There's not a month that goes by that I won't be like, let's say driving in the car or at work, where I won't just say to myself, like, you call this going straight.
Silently quoting Nuns on the Run right. To yourself.
The trailer for Nuns on
nice.
The Run. So I just, today I was thinking about my favorite movies and I thought, I feel like this.
Nuns on the Run should be on
it
the
just
list.
Deserves a place in, only in that, like, it's been as much a part of my life. As any movie I've ever
seen. The trailer for Nuns on the Run.
The trailer.
All right.
Just that one That one line. So anyway.
So we've got 1 through 5, but then 5A.
5A is Nuns on the trailer for Nuns on the Run.
All right, good to know.
Yeah.
Awesome. So with that in mind,
yes.
Let's take everything else you say with a severe grain of salt. What other trailers are in your top 5?
Maybe you should just cut that
whole story. Hell no. I actually might move it to the front of the podcast.
We shouldn't do. But okay. I'd love to know your favorite trailers.
Ever?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I can't think that far back, honestly, you know. Right. Like I really liked the Mission Impossible trailer this year. I really liked the Super 8 trailer this year. But to go back, I don't know.
Nuns
on the Run. I mean, that's easy.
Nuns on the Run. I'm not saying this is a good trailer, but I remember being a little kid and sick, and I was in my parents' bed because that was like a treat. If you were sick, you got to like. I was hanging out in their bed.
I was not allowed.
I was watching.
My
parents didn't know you, so.
Well, right. My parents are divorced. Their bed was a cold, cold place. Not good for the sick. Not good. Your joke was better about your parents didn't know me.
Hardly. And I remember just watching TV. I was by myself, and the trailer for The Fly 2 came on, and it was just like it was. I don't know if it was the I don't even know what it's called, but the little fucking like heartbeat screen.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like beep beep.
That was the teaser. That wasn't even the trailer.
Okay,
right?
There, yeah, and like it's you know people giving it's right. you know a woman giving birth, and the doctor's freaking out at what's right. coming out of it. That scared the piss out of me. So that's a very memorable trailer. This has totally gone off rails. I apologize.
Watching trailers with Mike, everyone. Nuns on the Run and The Fly 2.
That's probably all. That's probably all. That's it.
Those are the top two.
I have a great Snow Falling on Cedars trailer story about contributor Adam, but I don't need to tell that now.
He cried, right?
He cried.
In the trailer? For Snow Falling on Cedars, a movie I saw and couldn't tell you one thing about except that it was fucking boring.
Adam
and Ethan Hawke was in it.
I want to say we were seeing Man on the Moon.
That's possible. Yeah, it's around the same time.
And that trailer came on, and I turned to him and said something stupid like, "Yeah, that's something our girlfriends would drag us to." Something stupid like that. And Adam's reaction was
weeping.
His reaction was like, "Yeah, yeah, you're right."
What?
And I looked at him like, "Are you crying?" Like, no, man. He was crying, and
I think it's funny too that you're just ratting him out right now. He's not even here.
He's gonna kill me.
Yeah.
He, by the way, just to end that story, he rented that movie when it eventually came out with his girlfriend.
He cried in the trailer and didn't even go see it in the theater.
He did not, but his girlfriend fell asleep when he rented it, and he cried by himself next to his sleeping girlfriend, his sleeping Asian girlfriend.
Oh my gosh!
While watching Snow Falling on
Cedars. Wow. All right. So anyway, what you've done basically. Is
waste everyone's.
You've just destroyed our reputation because, listen, I already was like, I haven't seen Rashomon, I haven't, but then you're like, I love Nuns on the Run and The Fly too. And some of us cry during the trailer for Snow Falling on Cedars. I don't care if he's only been on a couple times. The fact that we let him in the door.
My point is, trailers are really effective.
All right. We were going to talk about your five favorite movies, though, and we should probably do that before thing runs like Alex long. You know what I'm saying?
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi,
here's a surprise.
Am I interrupting?
No. We're just recording a podcast. We're just talking about Snow Falling on Cedars.
Oh.
That's my
So, you know, a regular Thursday.
All right, I'm going to go back upstairs then. I have podcast-related cookies.
Oh, yes. Okay, what do we got? This has happened before on the Top Gun podcast.
It's been a while.
Erica made Top Gun cookies.
I did. What movies have you talked about?
None, literally. Nuns on the Run.
So I can't tell you what kind of cookies I made because it's going to give away.
You're right, actually. That's true.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's true. You can't.
Okay, so here are the regular ones you can eat.
Hey, thanks.
Okay. Here are the ones you have to figure out.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
There's literally no.
Okay, this I think I know. That one I know.
You don't.
I absolutely do.
It's not Pac-Man.
I know it's not
okay.
Pac-Man.
Yeah,
I know what that is.
Yeah, I know what that is, too, but I don't know what
I don't know if you know what it is for real.
Okay.
Okay.
This is gold.
That one really did not come out right.
No, that I have no idea what that is.
It looks a little bit phallic. And this one is, well, I can't say.
Wow.
Okay, so when you get to the films, try to figure it out, and I'll come back later.
Okay, so let's just call these, okay. This is the one that looks like an arrow.
Okay.
So later on, when I say the one that looks like an arrow, you can say, okay, that was this.
Okay.
This one, I don't want to say what that looks like. But
it's not that kind of podcast.
What really? What do we call that?
Oh, and these are. That's actually something too.
This really?
Okay. Yeah, these two small pieces that look like parts of a dead body.
Okay.
Those are supposed to be parts of a dead body.
And is that? Yeah. Okay. I think
give
we know
this a name so that we know what to refer to it as later.
Tumor.
Okay. The tumor cookie.
I was gonna say blob.
Okay.
What are we gonna call this one?
I don't want to say what I'll call that one because that will give away his first movie. But let's name your first movie right now.
You mean number five?
Sure.
Pulp Fiction.
Okay. That was not what this was. So forget that.
Okay.
Come back later and tell us what the cookies
were. All right, I'll see you guys later. There is a song that I could hum on my way out that would tell you what that one goes to.
I know what that song is.
It involves, can I say what instrument it involves?
Yeah.
Piano?
That's on piano? Now I don't know what that is. Did you think this was something else?
Bye, see you later.
I didn't know what... I thought I knew what it was, but I didn't know how it related to any movie on my list.
I thought I knew what it was. All right, listen, we all had different ideas. This is so interesting to you, the listeners. So, Pulp Fiction. Let's talk about Pulp Fiction.
Okay, Pulp Fiction would be my number five.
All right.
That is my... Well, it's one of my favorite movies. So it's my favorite Tarantino movie. I'm not saying it's his best, but it's my favorite. And it's been discussed many times on this podcast.
Has it?
I feel like it
I feel like it ever has, but maybe it has.
It has when when you and Doug did the like Kill Bill.
Okay.
It had a very big effect on me. I'm pretty confident in saying it's a movie I've seen the most in a theater.
Okay.
When it came out, it absolutely blew me away. It had been something that I was, what was that, 93?
94.
So yeah. I was 15, 16 years old.
Okay.
But it was something I just had never seen before. And it excited me in a way that movies hadn't for some time, or at least for different reasons. Like when I was younger, every movie I saw excited me because it was a movie and I was in the theater. And,
You couldn't wait to see... Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
No, I couldn't wait to see Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. but it blew me away, and it was a movie I couldn't quite wrap my head around, but I became obsessed with, I still don't know how Tarantino necessarily made things work, but I became obsessed with his way of storytelling.
When you saw Pulp Fiction, had you already seen Reservoir Dogs?
I had seen Reservoir Dogs.
Okay,
and I think
this was not like your introduction to Tarantino.
No, but I don't think I was ready for Tarantino when I saw Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
I looking back on it, I don't think I was a really smart kid. Like, I love movies, but I saw...
The Nuns on the Run story. I'm not saying it established that, but...
I saw Reservoir Dogs and I liked it just fine, but it was different enough. Like, when you saw it...
Yeah, it definitely had a big impact on me.
Right, it... Didn't at all.
Okay. I mean, so you didn't go into Pulp Fiction like, this is the guy that made Reservoir Dogs, I can't wait to see...
Correct. I went into Pulp Fiction knowing it was the guy who made Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
But I wasn't excited for that reason. But,
okay.
I
was all charged up. Like, Tarantino, to me, when I saw Pulp Fiction, like, the night it opened was already kind of a rock star, because it was like, I had loved Reservoir Dogs so much, and he was so interesting, and I was seeking stuff out from him, and like, I knew it had won the award at the Cannes Film Festival, and I just was like, oh, I was like rabid to see that movie. And I definitely loved it. And, you know, it's a hard movie to talk about because it's like, as much as you say it's obvious to say, like, Pulp Fiction is one of my favorite movies, at the same time, I think a lot of people would be reluctant to name it as one of their favorite movies because I think people are quick to, like, write it off now. You know what I mean? Like, there was such a backlash against Tarantino and against that movie, and it became this shorthand for, like, the guy who loves Boondock Saints also loves Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean?
The guy who made Boondock Saints.
Yeah, well, obviously. Right. But it was like, it was the movie that like, it was the kid who was going to film school, like loves Pulp Fiction or whatever.
Right. Exactly.
And so I don't think it gets a ton of respect now, but I watched it not that long ago. Every couple of years I watch it.
You forget how good it is.
Yeah,
right. Like for that reason.
Right. Because all that exists in your head is sort of the weird hype around it. And the movie becomes secondary, and then you go back and watch it, and like, oh, the movie itself is, to me, really good.
Yeah. I remember, like, specifically what always blew me away, what always got me super excited about seeing it in a theater, especially, you know, assuming most of the people in the theater had not seen it before,
yeah.
was this scene where Vincent Vega, John Travolta's character, shoots Orlando Jones, Marvin, in the face.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Pulp Fiction. And his head blows up. And it always fascinated me because I didn't understand how Tarantino did it at the time. But how did he make this moment where an entire theater would gasp? There'd be this beat. He'd say, "Oh man, I shot Marvin in the face," and the theater would erupt in laughter. Yeah, that always, yeah, like, right. That's the scene that always sticks out to me.
Right.
That it's just this amazing, just amazing storytelling. And,
well, and again, you know, that Tarantino is a very polarizing filmmaker. A lot of people aren't into what he does. I think there's a lot of people who are, honestly, and it's fine if you genuinely don't like what he does. I mean, everybody obviously is entitled to their opinion, but I do think there's a section of movie fans who resist him just to distinguish themselves.
Oh, I understand.
And that's true of anything. You know, there's people who hate Christopher Nolan because they don't like Christopher Nolan, but I think there's also people who hate Christopher Nolan because it's like, oh no, I don't want to be the guy who likes Christopher Nolan.
Right.
Just as, you know, there's crazy people who love Christopher Nolan. Like, why? Can you explain to me? Oh, I love Dark Knight. Okay, well, that's not exactly.
Right.
But we can have that conversation. But Pulp Fiction, you know, like, depending on your feelings about sort of movie violence or whatever, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who that represents so much of what they don't like about Tarantino, that it's a punchline, that it's funny, that he doesn't take it seriously.
Right, I understand that. But I think what I just responded to for that scene specifically was I'm just fascinated that he was able to elicit that reaction
from definitely. Pulp Fiction is great, and in a lot of ways, I'll always love it just because of what it meant to me at the time, you know. Because it is sort of a turning point for people our age, I think, to start getting interested in a different kind of movie.
That was definitely my turning point.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I feel you were definitely ahead of me.
Well, I'm a little bit older, honestly. Well, yeah, I know. Not a ton, still. But like... But which could be it, but... Right.
No, that was definitely the movie.
For that me. You like start seeking out different kinds of movies.
Absolutely.
And then even just reading, you know, interviews with Tarantino, you know, you could, again, you can hate Tarantino because you find him long-winded or obnoxious, but, like, he drops the names of so many other filmmakers and movies that, like, if you are somebody who's interested in him and you're reading interviews, he's going to turn you on to different stuff. So if nothing else,
I know Sonny Chiba because of him. Like I saw Street Fighter because of him.
And, as did I because of True Romance. Yeah. Like, and even I think A Better Tomorrow, like he was, I don't know if he was my introduction to John Woo, but like A Better Tomorrow too, cause they're watching it, whatever. Yeah. I dig Pulp Fiction. I won't say it's my favorite of his movies, but that's where I was going.
It's my favorite. I don't think it's necessarily his best.
Right.
But for exactly the reasons you said, I think it was a big turning point for me, you know, so that's why it's on there, but you know, give me a few years in Inglourious Basterds, man.
Right. And my issue with Pulp Fiction, and again, I don't actually have a problem with the movie, but the reason why I would maybe like some of his movies better is because I still don't feel like Pulp Fiction is really about anything.
No.
It's super entertaining. It's really well done. You could say that like, yeah, it's about redemption or whatever, cause there's little hints of that, but like, it's not about things the way that some of his later movies, I think, are. That they deal with bigger issues or deeper themes or whatever.
Right. Well, but also, you've said before on the podcast, I also feel this way sometimes that whatever Tarantino movie I'm watching at the moment
is my favorite one. Yeah, right. And there's a few directors that are like that.
Yeah. But I think at the end of the day, it is Pulp Fiction.
Okay. And what would be next for you, sir?
My number four would be The
Coen. Are these in order?
Yes.
These are?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
My number four.
I think you're the first to actually rank them in order.
Am I really?
Yeah.
Number four would be The Coen Brothers' Fargo.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of The Coen Brothers. I love most of their movies. Raising Arizona is one of my favorite movies. That would be another one.
Based on your life story.
Yes, based on my life story.
Fargo, Raising Arizona would be number two behind Fargo in terms of... Your favorite Coen Brothers movie?
I think so.
Okay. I don't know what mine would be, actually. Fargo would be my first. Like, that's my favorite of their movies. But I don't know what my next favorite would be. That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. After Raising Arizona, I'm not sure where
I
would go. There's plenty to choose from.
Yeah.
But Raising Arizona... But
Fargo.
Yeah. Fargo's just another movie that
especially as I got older and it started...
Especially.
Thank you. As I got older, I'd eat Paschetti. And they too, like, to me, are wonderful storytellers. And Fargo to me... Fargo to me is a... I told myself I wasn't going to use the word perfect when describing any of these movies.
No, I agree.
But that's, to me, just a perfect
movie. I think...
movie.
All five of your choices, I think, I would say. That doesn't mean it's a flawless movie.
No, not at all, because I don't think that exists. Those aren't the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't. It definitely does not exist.
Right.
But yeah, that they're perfect at what they're doing.
Fargo, to me, made me pay attention to tonal shifts.
Okay.
More than any movie before it.
Yeah.
Like the Coen brothers are...
You know who did that for me? Too.
What's that?
Cool World. Not really.
Has there ever been a Cuffs reference, by the way?
On the podcast? On the podcast? There has to have been.
He loves Cuffs, people.
It's no Nuns on the Run. But I did see Cuffs in the theater. At least I've seen more than the fucking trailer. Put my money where my mouth is. True. Damn it.
There's so many amazing things. Like, we could pull the Chris Farley show on all these movies. There's so many amazing things about that movie, from the cinematography to the performances, which are like, Frances McDormand's performance it's so like borderline, not over the top, but almost cartoonish, but it never crosses that line. And I mean, the whole movie is like that to me.
And that's what's interesting too. Not that Raising Arizona doesn't have moments of genuine sort of pathos or emotion, because the end of that movie is
poetry.
It is. And it's genuinely moving, but most of the movie is pitched at the level of like a Looney Tunes short. And what's so interesting about Frances McDormand in Fargo is she's not too, a little bit more, and she would be in Raising Arizona.
Yeah,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like,
almost
she walks
all the
at,
characters in Fargo.
Absolutely.
And they're just this side of realistic.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable.
Fargo, I think, is so super good, and every time I watch it, I'm just blown away. Frances McDormand, Marge Gunderson.
Yes.
We've never done this unofficial poll on the podcast, and I don't even know what my answer would be, but like the last time I watched Fargo, which was maybe a year ago, it did occur to me that I've never thought about like who my favorite movie character is of all time.
Okay.
But if I were to sit down, Marge Gunderson, if not my number one, would probably be in my top three.
Yeah, she'd be in the conversation for sure. No, she's amazing. That's funny.
I
never get much out. I agree.
Every one of her scenes, I think, is so good and interesting. And
right. But then even with that said, I mean, quite often with movies like that, with a character performance that's that good, when you're away from that character or performance, you just want to get back to her. And I don't feel that way with Fargo. And that
because everybody is...
Right. It's just
has an interesting story that's worth following.
Exactly. And
but again, the fact that, you forget until you rewatch Fargo that she doesn't show up until, I don't know, 40 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Because she sort of hangs so heavy over it in your mind, in your memory. But she's not in it until 40 minutes in. But every single person is good.
They just have this amazing way of blending, comedy with real dark stuff. Brother-in-law of mine actually did not like the movie because he'd heard how funny it was.
And that happens.
Does happen. But he went in and I felt like I just wanted to so bad, erase his memory, because I think it ruined it for him. But he really went into it thinking he's getting, hangover.
It's hard. Now I think they're enough of a brand name that they can sell you on, this is the new Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And people sort of understand what they're getting into. But in 96, they hadn't had a huge commercial hit.
No.
And people didn't know what to expect, and that movie kind of broke out. And so I'm sure there was some of the advertising was like, haha, the new funny black comedy from the Coen brothers.
Yeah, I guess.
And it's definitely not. I had to go downtown to see, and maybe I might have told this story on the podcast before, but I went to the city to see it because it opened it up. It opened very limited initially, like one, maybe two theaters downtown, and before it went wide.
Yep.
But as soon as it opened in the city, I made the trip out there to see it. And the movie ended, and it was a full theater of mostly sort of middle-aged yuppies, I guess would be what they would be called. And the row of them behind me stood up and said, I don't remember if they called it one of the worst movies they'd ever seen or just like, that was so stupid. Just immediately wrote it off, which I have a problem with always. I think it's so weird when people are so willing to make a snap judgment the second the credits begin.
Right.
And they have to announce it. Anyway, there was this woman, a senior citizen woman, you know, in her 60s or 70s, who was next to me by herself in this big fur coat. And she turned to me and said, what did you think? And I said, I loved it. And she said, it was just beautifully done. And that has always stuck with me, that there's this old woman by herself seeing Fargo.
That's amazing.
Saying it was just beautifully done. And I have these morons behind me. No, so stupid. Like, again, it's not for everyone, but...
One of my biggest movie regrets is that I did not see it in the theater.
Oh, no?
No. I went to get a Blockbuster and rented it. And
that's kind of amazing, too, though, that it registered with you. Because I think it's hard sometimes to see a movie at home or on video or whatever.
Absolutely.
And to have it impact you so much that you would say it's one of your favorites ever, you know?
Absolutely.
Although, that's kind of how all of these movies... That's how we live with them eventually, because I don't think, you know,
well,
Pulp Fiction, I mean, you saw it in a theater, but I don't know that at that time you said, that's one of my favorite movies ever. It's not until you watch it over and over again.
And Pulp Fiction's the only one of my top five I've seen in
a theater. I was just going to say, as I was thinking back on it, because there's some stuff from before you were born.
Yes.
And Nuns on the Run, you already said, I got to stop making that joke.
Why did I make that up?
Because it was a funny story, that's why.
Fargo's
number three, your third favorite movie? The movie you like better than Pulp Fiction and Fargo, but not as much as two other movies.
Two and three maybe sometimes would flip-flop a bit.
Okay.
But you put a gun in my head, I'm going to say it's my number three, and that is Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather.
Okay.
Or Mario Puzo's The Godfather.
Yes, please.
Excuse me. One of the things I love most about The Godfather, I'll take this a different direction, is that give me any DVD... And I
will not.
It could be this.
Stop asking.
It could be the Smurfs. And if it has a,
how many times I should tell you, I don't have the Smurfs.
If it has a making of featurette on it, I'm gonna watch it.
For real?
Yeah, I don't care what the movie is.
But they're almost always bad. They're almost always like just press kit.
They are
studio. They're not.
I know.
If I find out it's like a real making of, like especially a retrospective, those are great.
Absolutely.
Those are good with distance, but usually it's just like a 10-minute thing that they put on HBO.
And it usually is, but if there's any shot of, you know, a director setting up a shot or, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I love it. Like, I love the making of any movie.
There's so much coming out about you tonight that I didn't know.
I love the stories behind it, but maybe no movie more. So, did that sentence even make sense?
I think so.
Than The Godfather.
Yes.
What
are some of the stories? Because somebody just commented, I want to say... Saul? Somebody just commented, because JB published that list of like 160 movies that everybody should see, and one of our listeners, I'm sorry, I want to say it's Saul, but I might have that wrong, was talking about like, I'm going back and watching all these classic movies now, and was talking about, you know, the difference that like maybe age makes or perspective, and said, you know, that he had watched The Godfather once when he was younger. And got nothing out of it. Just thought it was kind of boring and slow and like, why does everybody love this? And then just recently saw it again and was like, oh my gosh, that movie's a masterpiece, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't remember where I was going with that. But so some people are still sort of new to The Godfather. That's where I was going with that. What are some of the stories that people would not believe if they had heard?
Well, if the producers had their way, it would have been, I don't think we'd be talking about it today.
Right.
Coppola had to fight for everything that makes that movie great. I swear to God, Coppola had to fight for. They wanted it shot. They wanted it contemporary.
Right.
Because it's cheaper that way. I mean, really, the bottom line of most of these stories is cheap, cheap, cheap.
Yeah.
They wanted it.
And Coppola wasn't Coppola when the movie was made.
No,
he
no.
He made some movies, but he was basically a studio hire.
Yeah, he was a studio hire. One, because he was Italian-American.
Right.
Two, because they knew he was a writer, so they wouldn't have to hire a writer for any rewrites.
It's so fascinating how... greatness happens by accident.
Right,
you know?
Right, it's amazing. The studio wanted
Robert Redford or Ryan O'Neal specifically to play the part of Michael, went to Al Pacino. So Coppola had to fight for Al Pacino. They said, no way. The head of Paramount Pictures said, Marlon Brando will never appear in a Paramount film, because by then he was a pain in the ass to work with. Coppola had to fight for that. They, like I said, they wanted a contemporary. Coppola had to fight for it to be a period film. They wanted it shot in St. Louis. He had to fight for it to be shot in New York. He delivered the music, that iconic music. They didn't like it because I believe Love Story had a more like pop soundtrack, and Robert Evans thought that was the way to go. Coppola was constantly being, it felt like he was about to get fired, because he was about to get fired. They'd get the dailies, and the producers would see the dailies and say, like, this movie's way too dark. Brando's mumbling, we can't understand him. They thought Pacino's performance was lifeless. They thought there was nothing to it. And I mean, little things like they wanted more action, and we're going to hire an action director to come in and at least shoot some action scenes. So Coppola had the scene where his sister Talia Shire, Connie is beat up by her husband. He added that scene because they needed. Because he was convinced they were gonna either fire him or just bring in an action director.
Wow!
So he had his oldest son who passed away. He grabbed him and Talia Shire one night, and they worked out how that scene was gonna go. And then the next day, filmed it. So
doesn't it have like ramifications through the whole movie?
Yes. But well,
this is surprising that it was added in because
that
leads to this, you know.
Right. I mean, the only thing I could assume is that, you know, they would have implied she was beaten.
Okay.
But,
okay.
So
they should have added more car chases.
Right. Right. Exactly. So it's just, like
Ryan O'Neal in St. Louis.
Well, and also when they hired him to do it, they greenlit the movie. The book hadn't become this huge success.
Right.
So, you know, unfortunately for Coppola, as he's about, you know, to get going, the book blows up, so now everybody is way more interested.
Right.
So, I mean, like that just makes, I mean, and you know, to hear all those stories, and those are just the Cliff Notes, but to hear all those stories and then see what, you know, what wound up on the screen is just amazing to me. And I would say, you know, The Godfather winds up on all, you know, like AFI when they do their greatest movies ever, Sight and Sound, whatever. It's always in the, you know, the top, you know, usually like top five, top 10. And for me personally, of all, you know, of the movies that it's usually alongside, like Casablanca or Gone with the Wind or
Citizen Kane
or Lawrence of Arabia, Cuffs. While I understand why all those movies are on there and they're great, and I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with me, they're the type of movie that, they're the types of movies that I would maybe see it, say, okay, I understand why it has its place. And I'm good now. I don't need to see it again. Where to me, The Godfather is the most watchable masterpiece, or you know, classic movie.
I think I would agree with that.
It's just
the most watchable masterpiece. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those movies that, you know, whenever it found flipping through the channels and it's on AMC all the time, and they murder it. but I'll just put it on for a few minutes and then get sucked in. It's just, it's an amazing movie.
It is super good. And again, like with any movie, there's going to be plenty of people who are like, what? No, fuck The Godfather. I don't think it's that great. You know? So for me to come out and say like, I think it's one of the best movies ever made. There's plenty of people who would say, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's fine. So there's your caveat. People will not agree with me when I say that I think it's one of the best movies ever made, but I do. I you're absolutely right, because I can watch Citizen Kane and appreciate the hell out of it, but I rarely am like, I want to watch Citizen Kane, you know? Like, I don't necessarily enjoy it. Sometimes it feels like school.
Right.
I can appreciate so much of it, but not the case with The Godfather. The Godfather is like, hey, school that's fun to go to.
Right, exactly.
Unbelievably great. And now lots of people, and we've probably had this conversation before, but lots of people, you know, there's a very popular opinion that The Godfather 2 is a superior movie.
My mother would be in that group.
Right. A lot of people would. You do not agree, right?
I do not agree.
Nor do I.
And I'm a big fan of The Godfather 2, but
I only am recently. Because for a long time I was like, not only do I not think it's better than the first movie, I don't even like it all that much. Oh, but the last two or three times I've watched it, I have truly begun to appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's great. There's a lot going on in Godfather 2. I just showed it to my wife for the first time, and I think, you know, it's, you know, a little more overwhelming than the first one. But no, I think it's really great. But no, for me, the first one is.
Yeah.
At least for me, I don't know that there's a better final shot of a movie. Like, that shot gives me goosebumps every time. I'm sure there are, but for me, like, that's probably my favorite final moment of any movie.
I'm trying to think of how I'm trying to remember how Weird Science ends. And it's not coming, so I'll go with The Godfather. I'll go with The Godfather. Again, I've talked about this book lots of times on the podcast, but a book called It Don't Worry Me by Ryan Gilbey. Do I have that right? He spends a lot of time on that last shot and how it's very important that we are outside the room as opposed to...
I thought you said we're
inside. I'm sorry, that we're inside the room as opposed to being outside being Diane Keaton. We are inside. We are Al Pacino.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a huge distinction, but it's a great essay. And he makes a case for the fact that The Godfather 2 makes 1 better, actually.
Right.
Which, okay, maybe. I don't know. Again, I don't know. I don't know that 1 needs anything to be better, you know? But I think all of your movies, with the exception of Fargo, are like, and obviously you haven't named your last two yet, but like super iconic to the point where like they've permeated pop culture.
Right.
Even if you haven't seen them, you know when one is being referenced, you know? And that's true, I think, even of your next two movies. Yeah, but Fargo is the only movie, I think, that is not that way.
I agree.
Fargo is its own little thing. So next, the movie that is better than The Godfather. Better than The Godfather.
I'm not saying it's better than The Godfather, but it's
you like it better. You like it more than The Godfather.
It depends on the day, but probably end of the day, yes.
All right.
But that movie would be Jaws.
Okay.
Jaws. And Steven Spielberg gets brought up quite a bit on this podcast, I feel like Jaws doesn't get talked about.
Because Jaws is just one of those movies that it's
right, exactly.
I'm going to run into this when I name some of my favorites. It's just like, it's like reviewing a birthday. It's like, no, we all agree, this is great. We don't need to spend time on it, you know, but let's spend some time on it.
And like the
guy. By the way, that's what I thought this cookie was. I thought it was Jaws. I thought that was the mouth, and those were the fins, and that was the tail.
No, see, I thought it was a body.
It's all a matter of perspective, everyone.
And Jaws, like The Godfather, also has, and I won't get into it, but an also, like, fascinating story how that was made. Right. Like, all the, you know, the cast and crew nicknamed it Flaws.
Good one, guy. Good one, Dreyfus.
But it's, and I'm...
Sorry.
And, you know, I've said it before on this very podcast, I'm unapologetic, big fan of Steven Spielberg. I love many of his movies, but none more than Jaws. Like The Godfather, and really all the movies, I guess, on my list, it is endlessly watchable.
Yeah, it's another movie that I would say is a perfect movie. Again,
it is.
It's not. There's flaws, right?
Right.
That was the original title.
Right. But, I mean, as perfect as a movie can be from, you know, from dialogue to performances to everything. That is my movie, and I'm curious if you have this movie, too. I think a lot of people do. Do you have a movie that you... you'll judge someone depending on their reaction to that movie, whether or not they like it.
I don't have a go-to movie, no.
I didn't realize that I did, but I think it's Jaws.
For me, it's like, it's all movies. It's like, you gotta tell me 5 that you like or don't like, and I think I know who you are.
But, like, the movies on my list, if you didn't like Pulp Fiction, fine. If you didn't like Fargo, fine.
Here's the thing.
Who doesn't like Jaws?
Yeah, well, see, I wouldn't judge somebody as a person if they didn't like Pulp Fiction or Fargo.
But you judge them as a person if they
like Jaws. But I would maybe be able to say, like, okay, we are not going to have a ton in common. Like, we just have different sensibilities.
Correct.
But we could still relate as human beings. Sure. But yes, if they say, I don't like Jaws, I think there's something broken inside.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's my...
The Godfather, too, though. I mean...
No, yeah.
I should say The Godfather also, not The Godfather Part 2.
Right.
You're allowed to not like that.
I think that's my go-to movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got something for everyone. It's got... like JB in his list he just posted, he put it as a horror movie.
Yeah.
Would you put it as horror?
I mean, yes, to the extent that it's about a monster that's killing people.
Right.
You know?
I just like that. I think you can go to...
you know, when video stores existed, you can go to video stores all over the place, and they might be in different.
Sure.
It might be in action. It might be in horror. Sure. Might, you know, and I just like that. That's
documentary.
That's one of the things I love. I just love about the movie is it's got.
Is that what led to your purchase of Shark Week on DVD?
It may have. My love of sharks may have.
I love Jaws. Jaws is a perfect movie. Jaws has great. There's comedy in it. There's three great performances. Interesting dialogue, which you so rarely get. You know, and Jaws, again, is always pointed to alongside Star Wars. It's like, well, those are the movies that, you know, ruined movies. And everybody blames them, even though nobody says they're bad movies. But it's like, those were the first summer blockbusters. And then everybody started copying that. And that's what led to Transformers, you know. And in a way, I guess they're right. But what nobody acknowledges is that Jaws is fucking awesome.
Right, exactly. Like,
you can't hold Jaws account. Nobody bothered, you know, they wanted a big summer movie that was like, but nobody bothered to try and copy the quality, I guess, of Jaws.
Right.
I love Jaws. I don't think I would say it's my favorite Spielberg movie.
What's your favorite Spielberg movie?
I don't know.
I can't imagine I'd even argue with you because, I said, I love Raiders of the Lost Ark. I love Close Encounters. I love E.T., Jurassic Park.
Yeah, he's got some good ones, eh?
He really does.
I don't know. Lately, and this is not just, I swear this is not just the Super 8 fan in me talking. Yeah. Lately, I would say it's E.T.
Okay.
Because E.T., I think, summarizes everything he does so well.
Yeah.
Jaws is such an exercise in technique. Jaws is almost a Hitchcock movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas E.T., I think, has more heart to it.
Sure.
As trite as that sounds. And that's so much of Spielberg, mm-hmm. especially now.
Yeah.
And Jaws. Well, I won't say that Jaws is a cold movie or a heartless movie, but it doesn't have what E.T. has. And sometimes that, you know, a lot of times that's what I want from a movie is sort of that emotional connection.
Right.
That I get out of E.T. more than Jaws. But again, Jaws has those things.
What a run he was on, by the way.
Holy shit. I was just talking about this in an email with one of our listeners, who I meant to bring this up when you talked about the Coen brothers. She told this story in an email to me that she went to see No Country for Old Men and wasn't totally familiar with the Coen brothers. She confused it. She thought she was seeing a Farrelly Brothers movie.
Oh, my God.
And sat through No Country for Old Men like, what is going on? And again, since has you know... Now, loves the Coen brothers or whatever, but...
That's amazing.
She was talking about how she is not a Spielberg fan anymore and thinks that he's almost like at Michael Bay level now. I was just talking about like his run from Jaws through Color Purple.
Sure. I mean, you got Close Encounters, E.T., Raiders, all in there.
Right. I mean he's got 1941, but nobody's perfect. But yeah, just the fact that like... Jaws, Close Encounters, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T. And, I mean, I'll put Color Purple on that list. It's not on the level of the other ones, but I think Color Purple's a good movie.
Yeah.
But just those four movies are all crazy masterpieces to have those all in the same decade.
Well, and they have, and to go back to, you know, Godfather, Coppola had a pretty good fucking run, too.
Yeah, right. Godfather 2, Conversation, and Apocalypse Now.
Are you a fan of Patton?
I've never seen Patton.
Patton's awesome.
I don't even know. I can't even put Patton on my list of like the movies that I'm going back and watching because I don't own it.
You know what? Let me borrow Smurfs. I'll let you borrow Patton.
I don't have Smurfs. I don't. I protest too much. I have the Smurfs.
So Jaws is it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess people could say like, yeah, your picks are so obvious, but it's like, what's your favorite food? Pizza. Because pizza's
which is my favorite food, by the way.
I mean, to some extent, it should be everybody's favorite food. Pizza's delicious. Like, pizza is what's good about the world.
I know.
And so is Jaws, you know? It's just like, of course Jaws is one of my favorite movies. Come on, man. Anyway. Your number one favorite movie of all time
is Goodfellas.
All right.
This was discussed recently on Erica's podcast. Yes. She had it. Four. She would not budget from that number. She was all about ranking. And you guys did a great job sort of breaking that down. So I'll just talk about, on a personal level, what Goodfellas means to me. And actually, I wrote about this on the website not this past November, the one previously on our movies we're thankful for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hi, guys.
You want to explain? I just mentioned my favorite movie.
Oh, really? You got through all five already?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, we're at number five. Yeah,
okay. So the one that you thought looked like an arrow earlier?
Yes.
What is it?
An arrow. For Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Well, what about this tail/fin?
That's a shark.
Yay! That's Jaws.
Nice. Okay.
And this is...
I ate one of the pieces.
Oh, yeah. But... Okay, that's the girl that Jaws eats in the beginning of the movie.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, that's what's left of her.
And okay. What's this?
I don't know. It was supposed to be another Jaws, like a shark-related thing. And
So they were all Jaws? You just made Jaws cookies?
No, we didn't get to this one yet.
All right, okay, I just said my three Jaws cookies and then one other one.
Sorry.
I thought this was Jaws.
You
because
did?
Because I thought, yeah. Well, okay. Shit. Hold on. It's falling apart.
Okay.
I'll show you. It makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the Jaws mouth.
Right. Yeah, that's
And then
true.
That's, these are the fins.
Okay.
And that's the tail. I mean, okay. That's I thought but that it's for a, sure it's was a shark. And then you said well, on the way out, like, I could do music, and I thought it was like, da-na-da-na, but then you said you did Layla. So Mike, who's looking at it, by the way, not upside down.
Right, right.
He's Michael looking at it right side up. Body. It's a body.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Whose body?
Well, it's the guy in the freezer.
Johnny.
Oh, Carbone.
Johnny Carbone in the meat truck.
Frankie Carbone.
Or the meat freezer. Yes. Nice. That's it. Look at me. That's nice. Head. Hands.
Well, you
legs.
Needed to do like the weird Brillo hair.
Yeah.
That's really obvious. Could have gotten like an SOS pad out of the cabinet.
And... you could make this relate for a different movie, though.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
That's.
Oh, sorry, I'm knocking everything.
Marge's. That's a fetus.
Oh,
yeah, that's the baby that's going to be born in Fargo.
Oh, yay. That's nice.
There you go.
Well, thank you.
All right, you guys didn't eat anything.
No, well, no,
I didn't know.
I made you regular-sized ones, too. Okay.
We didn't want to be
that's rude to the listeners.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, well.
Thank you for the podcast.
Bye, guys. Bye, guys. Who am I?
Johnny two times. Is his name Johnny?
I don't think
I have that right.
Yeah, I think
Go get the papers.
Yeah. I got
to go get the
papers. Bye.
Bye.
All right, let's talk Goodfellas.
Wow. that's awesome. Yes, Goodfellas is my favorite movie. Ever since I was a little kid, I've always...
Wanted to be a gangster?
I've always wanted to walk right into that.
I mean, was that not on purpose?
It was not on purpose at all.
Jeez.
As far back as I can remember, I've always loved movies, and they've always been a huge part of my life, and my parents, now that I'm a parent, I realize how really wrong they were, but please don't judge them. I was the youngest of seven by a long shot. So by the time they got to me, they just sort of gave up.
Yeah.
And when they would go see a movie, really almost no matter what they'd go see, they would bring me with.
That's
and
awesome,
I, it's so
that
awesome.
Made you who you are.
Right, exactly. And I thank them for it. But so I was always obsessed with movies and a fan of movies, but I never gave it. I never gave it much thought other than just, you know, it's just something I love to do. I love to go
right.
see movies.
Right.
I saw Goodfellas, and it changed me.
Yeah.
Goodfellas, not to sound, you know, dramatic, but Goodfellas is a reason I think I went to film school. Goodfellas is a reason I'm on this podcast. I saw that movie, and suddenly I thought, oh, no, like, this isn't just, you know, something I find fun to do. This is something I want to read books about movies. I want to know, you know, who's Martin Scorsese, and I want
when
to see
will he direct Shutter Island?
I want
when
to,
will he make Gangs of New York?
I want to see other movies he's done. And you know, it was after Goodfellas that I started to seek things out.
Right.
I felt movies, you know, sort of came to me again. It was like whatever my parents are going to go see,
right,
I was
right.
going to.
Well, they were just kind of like entertainment.
Right, you know? Right, exactly. But Goodfellas just flipped a switch in me.
Yeah,
where it just. After seeing it, I thought, this is what I want to spend the rest of my... I mean, at the time, I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to be a director. Obviously, I'm, you know, sitting down here right now on a podcast, so that part didn't necessarily work out. But I went to film school. I pretty much, if I'm not reading a comic book, I'm reading a book about movies. And I feel like I owe all of that to Goodfellas. It just blew me away from...
Was it like a combination of everything? Was there like one specific aspect that jumped out at you? Was it the?
It made me aware of a director.
This is what I've talked about before with Reservoir Dogs. For me, it was okay. Reservoir Dogs watching it on video. I was like, oh, there's a person that's making all these choices and doing all these things.
Okay. Yeah.
That I was not aware of.
That was definitely Goodfellas.
Okay.
With me, it just why it was just like a slap to the face.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's funny too because I watched it with my mom and dad. We had rented it, so this, you know, came out on video, what, 1991?
Mm-hmm.
Again, way too young for me to watch it. But I remember, and my parents now love Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But when that first time we watched it, the three of us started out watching it. By the end of the movie, I was the only one in the room.
Really?
Watching. They both really did not like it, to the point where they didn't finish it.
That's fascinating.
Right. They've since...
Because again, I feel like unless you object to the violence or the language...
Spoilers for Goodfellas, when Spider...
Yes.
...was killed.
Yes.
That, at least for my dad, that was a moment where he really? Was like, all right, I think I'm done. But he, you know, I just became so obsessed with it that eventually I showed it to him again, and I don't know if he just wasn't in the mood or what. I don't even know where I was going with the story, but he and my mom are now, you know... Big fans of
Converts.
It, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I at the time it rocked me.
Yeah.
It changed me, and I owe everything to Goodfellas. I mean, it's probably safe to assume it's maybe another movie would have come along that would have had a similar effect.
Maybe not.
And it's still like it's on all the time on like Lifetime, yeah. Which is so weird. And VH1's been playing it.
Yeah,
and I hate it. I mean, for obvious reasons, watching it on those channels. But the other day. My wife was brushing our daughter's teeth and I was just flipping through the channels and it was on VH1. It was the last 5 minutes. And I'm telling you, like, I've seen that movie 100 times and it's still just watching those last 5 minutes on VH1. I still like, I get so excited and it brings me so much joy. It's just,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's and that's easily my favorite movie. Okay. And I think
like way ahead of all the other ones.
Way ahead because, I mean, again, because it had such an impact on me, but it's also an unbelievable fucking movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
definitely.
Yeah. And
well, that's what I was going to say. Like, unless you object to sort of the violence or the language, and it's fine, you know, that people are going to do that. But, like, if you're okay with those things, I can't imagine not liking the movie because it is so watchable. It's so, like, entertaining, but not in just a mindless way. It moves so well. And, I mean, all of the dialogue, everything about it is so good. And Goodfellas is another one of those movies, like I said, like all of your movies are sort of so iconic, they've permeated the you can't say like ever since I was a kid without somebody filling in I want to be a gangster, and you can't hear the end of Layla without thinking of that sequence. I mean, you cannot if you've seen Goodfellas. It just sticks with you forever. But Goodfellas, like Pulp Fiction, like The Godfather, I don't think Fargo, and I don't think even Jaws, are embraced by the people that we love, the people that love movies, the people that we're friends with or whatever, you know, but they're also embraced by another kind of person, which makes it hard to be such a fan of that movie.
Right. It drives me nuts. I was once given, a gift. It was a t-shirt with the like Goodfellas poster.
I'm right on top of that, Rose.
with the Goodfellas poster on it. And I have never worn it for that reason.
Because you're identified as kind of a douche.
Right, exactly.
Because unfortunately, douches embraced those movies as well as the people that we like. So it's unfortunate. But I'm glad that you don't shy away from... I'm glad that you don't let that influence the movies that you love. You know?
Absolutely right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sadly, you gave 5 wrong answers.
I did.
Because at no point did you mention Back to the Future. Literally at no point. You could have... At any time, mentioned Back to the Future, and you never did.
I mentioned Cuffs. I mentioned Avatar.
All right. You're hitting a few of my sweet spots. thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you, guys.
It's not easy to lay yourself out there, even when your choices are as obvious as yours.
Well, they're not easy to talk about, because, again, like it could turn into the Chris Farley show. So
right. Well, and all you can really talk about is sort of your personal connection to them, because to say, like, I love Jaws is like saying,
I love pizza.
I need sleep to survive. Like, well, of course.
Right.
But anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to enter the Win Our Stuff contest. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Only one more show to go before our 100th episode, everybody. The F This Movie Fest. Find out more about it at fthismovie.blogspot.com and sign up on the Twitter. And that's it. Mike, any parting words for us?
You call this going straight?